Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick, and it's time to review the defense from this game against the Jets. And here to join me to do that is Gabe Ferguson. Gabe, how you doing?
I'm good, Ken. Thanks for having me back on the pod.
Always a pleasure to talk football with you. As you know, Gabe, I was feeling pretty good about this win, leaving the stadium, and feeling pretty good about the fact that I was feeling pretty good about it, meaning that, well, you know, I can accept a 13-point win against the Jets. And they the game was in jeopardy early on. They didn't look good in the first half. But on the other hand, they came back and they won the game by 13 points. And it's not that much worse than line. And then I started hearing about the injury news after the game. I did already know about Kyle Hamilton slamming his helmet down, leaving the game twice. But felt a lot less good about that game with the injury news.
Yeah, especially on a short week. Injuries that could potentially be like a questionable or game time decision might have to have a tougher designation. And it's a divisional opponent at home. You feel like it's kind of a must win in a lot of ways, but it's going to be tough if you know, the BNPs turn up to be, you know, out on game day.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were just talking in the production meeting, but a DNP on a Monday, even though it was just a projection and Lamar had been taking some rests on Wednesday, a DNP on a Monday before a Thursday game is a lot worse than a DNP on a Wednesday before a Sunday game.
Yeah. I was going to say during the game on Sunday against the Jets, I think I tweeted once or twice that maybe take Lamar out, you know, like he did not look healthy. I mean, they were getting by with Lamar at like 70%, 75%. But he clearly wasn't the Lamar we're used to. And I know it's been a number of different injuries we've seen over the course of the season adding up, but it seems like quite literally it's been a different injury designation or a different body part that's shown up on the injury report every single week now. So I don't know if that's really the fact that he's dealing with 4 different injuries, or if it's just kind of like his whole leg is just not working the way it should. I don't know, obviously, but you know, they are putting those injuries on the injury report. So you have to imagine, especially with their issues earlier in the season, there's some truth to what they're saying. And maybe it's like, maybe it's a small thing. Maybe he has like a hangnail and you know, they're calling it a toe injury. And they would want to give him a day off because, you know, he's been taking days off every single week seemingly for the past, you know, month. So who knows exactly what the details of it, but he clearly didn't look like himself in this past week. I think more so than any other game we've seen so far this season. He just didn't have the quickness. He didn't have the burst around the edge. He didn't have the ability to make players miss. So I honestly, I don't know if they think, you know, we can go with him and come up with a game plan where he's playing at like 75% and maybe that's enough, or if you go with somebody who's at full strength with Huntley and hope for a Bears game again. It's a flip of the coin.
Okay, I'm going to leave a lot of that for tomorrow in the offensive podcast because that's where we really need to discuss a lot of the limitations Lamar presents to Monken, but it is not insignificant. It's taken away a big set of weapons from the Ravens. Their misdirection game is largely out the window. Yep. But let's talk about the defense because it's got some of its own problems, although they played very well against the Jets, I thought again. The offense avoided big mistakes. That was the good thing that they contributed to this win. They did have a couple of touchdown drives that were decent, sandwiched around a really short Jets drive, which ended up in a 4-and-out, actually. That was really nice for a tired Jets defense to pile up some snaps, which was good. consecutive snaps. So by the way, you know, always what I say are going to really get a defense tired, get hands on hips, get the heavy breathing going. And the Ravens were finally able to jam it down their throats into the end zone with extra tries. They eventually, you know, put together some opportunities for the offense that they couldn't fail, including some great punting in this game too.
Yeah. Jordan Stout is having an incredible season punting the ball. He had a 73-yard punt, I think, in this one, and a 68-yard punt.
It's 74, actually, and it tied 74. The longest punt in Ravens history, which was all the way back in 2008 by Sam Cook.
And the second one was so good it couldn't even be returned. I mean, it was that's the definition of the perfect punt, you know, coffin corner, 67 yards, 68 yards. Like, it doesn't get any better than that. Chef's kiss is in terms of special teams from the punting team, for sure.
It was a nearly perfect punt. If you haven't, by the way, seen Steve O'Neill, I think, is the punter for the Jets in 1969, who had the 98-yard punt. It's worth going to. Yeah, there's videos still out there on YouTube, so the NFL video is still available on it. But he's kicking from zone one, so he's right at the back of his own end zone, and guess where? In Denver, and he rockets the ball out of there. It goes over the head of Thompson, who was a great safety from the 70s, I think he's in the Hall of Fame, by the way. Thompson is, but anyway, ball rockets over his head, and it goes back towards the goal line, and it just stops rolling, and then takes that end bounce, which kind of rolls it back half a yard towards Thompson. It, like, inches before the goal line, Thompson picks it up, has to start and try and return it. And he was able to run laterally only, almost got taken down for safety, and then ends up returning it for 1 yard. Wow. So it's just an incredible, but it's worth just going out. It's only about 45 seconds of your life, plus probably about 45 seconds of ads that go with it, to watch it real quickly on either the Jets website or YouTube. Both of them will have it, but great punt.
Yeah, I mean, Stout's been having a good year, and the Ravens have needed it at times. Yeah. You know, he was a weapon in this game for sure. Helped flip the field a couple of times.
Yeah, you look at the fine year that Loop is having. Stout's a part of that as well as Cook was for the time he was here. So I think the Ravens will be re-upping Stout. I don't know what the amount is. I don't know whether he'll make $2.5 million or whatever, but I would do expect them to extend him.
Yeah, definitely agree.
So the Ravens won the turnover battle 2-0 in this one. They're now 10-3 in the 5-game winning streak. The little hiccup at Cleveland where they turned the ball over 3 times and they still came back to win because the defense overwhelmed the Browns rookie quarterbacks. But in this game, didn't have to rely on that. Tyrod Taylor did frankly play very well, but the couple of turnovers really finished, and they had the turnover on downs, so, you know, missing 2 fourth downs actually during the game were fairly pivotal as well.
I think the first turnover on downs was really maybe the key play in the game. You know, it gave the Ravens the opportunity to get the short field, convert on the short field, and really seemingly put the game out of reach. I think a lot of people who were watching the game were surprised at the decision to go for it there. It seemed like Aaron Glenn was a little bit kind of like just making an emotional decision. He was like frustrated, I think, at, you know, how things seemingly had turned a little bit in terms of the momentum of the game. And it was definitely a questionable decision. The Ravens benefited from it. Good job by the defense. It wasn't even a really close play at all. So good job on them.
I think I'd say from a mathematician's perspective, definitely really wasn't a close call. It was the right call. It just happened to not work out. And most of the time, that's going to be the case. Almost never will a coach truly cross the line. He'll often be told by his math people who are on his headset, yeah, this is, you want to go for this if you have at least an X percent chance, or if you go for this. And Ben Baldwin bot had it about a 3% increase in the chance to win the game, 2.8, maybe something like that. But that's really substantial when the whole range of outcomes was only about 15% on the whole thing. So it's a very plus EV play to go for that there. And surprising to me, it would have been a little surprising to me had they not done it. Mm-hmm. But there are coaches, probably Tomlin included, who probably would have not gone for it in that situation. They wouldn't have been right just because it failed. it really was the correct call.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that if all things were normal. But I feel like the Ravens offense hadn't really demonstrated the ability to kind of drive down the field all game. They had struggled. I mean, I know they just scored 7, but that was aided by, you know, a long penalty, pass interference penalty. Frankly, this was one of the worst Ravens offensive performances I can remember. I think if you look at some of the advanced metrics, it would agree with that. So I think that's part of the reason I was a little surprised, because the Jets defense has been playing really well. So yeah, I mean, maybe it makes sense. You can stop them again. But I'm glad that they went for it. Obviously it worked out real well for the Ravens, and it kind of, like I said, it was a pivotal moment. So defense really held up when they needed to.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And the last one was kind of a last ditch effort on 4th and 14, where they didn't really have a choice to go from fairly deep in their own end for it. And that ended up giving the Ravens a short field on that field goal drive at the end. But the last turnover was just on the Jets' last offensive play. It was the interception by Tampa, but the other one was really significant. And that was a fumble down close to the goal line on a 9-yard run by Hall. They got stripped free by Humphrey, down at the 3-yard line or whatever it was.
Yeah, and that was right after Hall had that really long, I think, catch and run. Mm-hmm. I think, was it the previous play or maybe two plays before, where, he looked really electric in the open field. I think he made four or five Ravens defenders miss tackles. And, that was quite the flip in terms of the Ravens there getting the ball back. Humphrey's been practicing that art for years now. He's one of the best in the game to do that. So for him to be able to come away with punch out there, the strip, and fortunately be able to cover the ball up for the Ravens. I think it was Gilman who jumped on top of the ball there. Really, really key player. I mean, that and the 4th down stop, I think, definitely would seal the game for the Ravens.
They're really facing kind of a 2-man offense in a lot of ways. The only guys the Jets have who are any good at all are Mechie and Hall. Mechie has been he's been a lifeblood for them since he's come to the team. He's had hit four targets his entire time at Philadelphia the entire year. Then he had 4, and he was averaging well over 10 yards a target since he'd been with the Jets. And then he had another game fairly similar to it in this week with, I think he had 6 or 7 targets in this one, but he was a big catch and run specialist. And Tyrod Taylor on the game did very well relative to his opportunity set, by the way, and we'll go into that in a little bit later, but he did a lot of it based on yak and missed tackles. So a lot of it was yak by Mechie and Hall specifically. And then they had a huge missed tackle by Gilman, which led to 35 or so yak on one particular play that was most of Tyrod Taylor's, actually is more than 100% of Tyrod Taylor's overage relative to expectation.
Yeah, he definitely didn't do much in terms of passing downfield in this game. It was a lot of checkdowns, short throws, and then letting the receiver run after the catch. I do feel like it was a good way to attack what the Ravens were presenting. They were kind of playing soft coverage, a lot of zone. Not a lot. I mean, we'll get into the pressure packages. Not a lot of big pressuring in terms of the blitzing like we saw last week against Cleveland. Much more conservative approach, I think, on defense this time around. When you play that way, you kind of have to tackle. I mean, that's one of the things that you need to do as a defense. And aside from a few plays, I think the Ravens were okay. But sometimes, one or two big plays because you miss a tackle in the open field can be really bad. So, I mean, going into next week, I know we're not talking about the Bengals, but Ja'Marr Chase, you got to clean up those tacklings. I mean, Gilman has had some struggles in that. Yep. We've seen a few too many, I think, missed tackles. And we've seen Ja'Marr Chase burn the Ravens how many times because, he makes one man miss and then takes it to the house. So that's something they really, I think, need to focus on in this coming week.
Right. I would completely agree. And I think they need to force the ball to other players in a lot of ways, do whatever they need to do in terms of gimmick coverages. It's still not that easy because Chase and Burrow have a great on-time rapport that is just very hard to stop. So he's always going to be able to find some sort of space, even if it's not the optimal kind. And that it's a great substitute for the run game at the very least, what they often do with him. So we'll see. It just scares me to death what they might be able to do without Hamilton against Burrow. What they've typically done, they've forced him to throw to the outside very often, and that's been where Hamilton's taken over the strong side of the football field. He's really been the player in recent years of the success with Burrow. That's been very, very pivotal. It's good if that's what Joe Burrow has to rely on. If Joe Burrow can sit back in the pocket at will and throw the ball 30 yards down the field, that's not good. That's where he burns you. So, all right, the Ravens won the snap count 58-57 in this game. They still have only three games the entire season. They're 6-5. They played 11 games. They have only three games the whole season where they had 60 or more snaps, which is bordering on the absurd. We're in twilight zone territory here with that. Normal average for an NFL game, by the way, is around 64.
Yeah, they're just not able to string together long drives. It's been an issue all season. I think it's largely due to the inability to consistently run the ball. They're just not able to kind of do those 12, 13, 14 play drives that, you know, it would chew up 8 minutes of the clock and, you know, kind of wear down defense. That's been a kind of a feature of the Ravens offense over the past, you know, 5-7 years with Lamar under center. It's just hasn't been able to be there this year. So until they can start running the ball more consistently, I don't see that fortunately changing. Less 3 and outs would help. That would definitely help some, but the running game is really what allows them to grind out those long drives.
Yeah. And the defense is doing their part now to reduce opposing turnovers. They're getting people off the field on high leverage downs. You know, they were, 38.5%, something like that. I think it was 5-for-13 on third down. No, it was less. It was been less. It's 4-for-11. And then they were 0-for-2 on fourth down.
Yeah.
So they certainly got the job done in terms of winning high leverage downs. You know, the offense is what needs to change, and they're just missing all their misdirection opportunities with the way they're set up right now. All right, I mean, you talked about the possibility of removing Lamar in this game. What about the possibility of removing some of the defensive starters late in the game? Travis Jones is a guy who certainly could use rest. They could have taken Roquan Smith out. It's kind of hard to say exactly where they should have taken him out. Maybe it's on the next to last drive where the Jets gave it up on 4th and 14, or maybe it's only for the last two plays, in which case I don't think it could help that much.
Yeah, it's a little tough because it was still a 2-score game, right? On the next to last drive, I think you need to have your starters out there for the most part, because they could have easily move the ball down the field if you had your backups in there. You let a couple of big plays go, and then you're an onside kick, you know, away from potentially tying it or losing it. So I think they did the right thing in this one. Unfortunately, I would have liked this game to have been a blowout from the get-go, and then you can actually remove those players in the fourth quarter. You get them a little bit extra rest, but you know, it was just not, unfortunately, a game where the Ravens were able to pull away the way I thought they might have been able to.
True enough. So in a lot of ways, fair to say that the season starts on Thursday night here. They've got four divisional games, 2 Cincinnati, 2 Pittsburgh, plus 2 other very tough games, home against New England, on the road against Green Bay. It seems to all come down to this. The gamblers really love the Ravens' chances. I haven't checked in the last like few hours since the injury report came out, but they were at about 77%. With Vig removed to win the AFC North earlier today.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think the odds would definitely change if Lamar's out this week, both probably for the division and for the game. the Bengals are also beat up. They're missing players. They're going to be missing, you know, Higgins. It looks like Hendrickson is not going to play as well.
Yeah, he's not playing.
So this is, you know, a game in theory where the Ravens would potentially have some advantages if they were able to field, you know, a healthier team, but it might just be a kind of a weird game with some of your star players not unable to play. But yeah, you're right. This is the start of the season. They need to win these division. I think if you win 3 out of 4, you're clearly in playoffs, taking the division crown. If you split two out of four, it's going to be close. I mean, there's a lot of permutations of that. But this is the hard part of the schedule. We had the early hard part. We had a soft middle, and then the end is tough. So we'll see what they're made of. And this is going to be playoff caliber football.
Yeah, you'd feel a lot better if it was the Ravens we know and love from 23 and 24 facing this Bengals team or the Steelers team or anybody, frankly. You'd feel a lot better about it, but they are where they are. So let's talk about some other players here. TJ Tampa starred on special teams. He got his first career interception on the Jets' last play from scrimmage there. Any hope for you? Are you feeling any different about TJ Tampa coming out of this game?
I don't think so. I mean, he didn't see enough snaps for me really to feel differently about, you know, I mean, it was obviously a nice play, get an interception at the end of the game, but I think he only played like a handful of snaps. Yeah. So it's not going to be something that I'm taking, you know, much away from. I do think they see him as somebody who could play in a pinch if they needed him. I think he's, you know, strictly outside corner, which is okay. You know, mm-hmm. you can move Awuzie inside, I think, if they needed to have him playing. Although he's been very good on the outside, I'm not sure I would love that. But it's, you know, it gives you a little bit more depth, I think, at the position. But I think they're more looking towards, you know, year three and year four for him to potentially become someone who has a larger role.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think it may be a case where Tampa ends up being a special teams player / fifth cornerback kind of guy who is he's there in case of a very serious run of injuries, which can happen from time to time at cornerback. But he becomes a real good special teams player. Had 3 special teams tackles in this game, which that's unusual, by the way, folks, that you get 3 in one game. So that really played well for him. I don't know if he got a game ball in this game, but he should have. If there's a special teams game goal to get given out, it would have been, well, first would have been Stout and then him. So, continue with Taven Bryan playing over Neas Peebles. I know that has a lot of people bothered. What are your feelings on that?
I mean, I feel like he's earned a little bit of a spot. He's played well in some games. I don't think this was his best game. He's a rotational defensive lineman. I don't think it's a huge difference between him and Peebles, to be honest. I think Peebles probably brings a little bit more juice as a pass rusher. And then Bryan's, you know, probably a little bit more stout against the run. And it just seems to be the way that the Ravens have prioritized players is they want to stop the run first. So if they feel like you're going to be a liability on pass or on a run down, and I think they're leaning towards the more proven run defender. I mean, people saw some snaps early in the season. I thought he showed some flashes, so I wouldn't say he's completely lost his ability to eventually make a contribution. But it seems like they like the rotation they have and they don't want to rock the boat with that.
Yeah. I mean, I Bryan, apparently there's some injury that he's got. The Harbaugh announced on Sunday that they would know more today about his situation than I didn't hear yet. Whether or not he has an injury that's serious. I actually thought going home in the car, we listened to Harbaugh's interview, and I thought he said Draymond, not Bryan, but Draymond. And I was distraught over the situation. Obviously, it's not good that Taven Bryan is hurt, don't get me wrong, but what Draymond has done for the Ravens so far has been outstanding.
Yeah, what a trade. I know it was some people didn't think the Ravens did enough at the trade deadline. But Draymond Jones has been a revelation for them. It's completely transformed their ability to, you know, rush the passer. Him and Kyle Hamilton, I would say, the combination of both their usage. Great job.
Mike Green also coming to life at the same time. I think Draymond has something to do with that, not because he's acting as a mentor to him or something, but just because of some snap relief they're getting from him in terms of how much Green has to be on the field.
Yeah, I think the same could be said for Kyle Van Noy, probably. Getting a little bit more of a rotation.
Yeah, Van Noy has really been focused into a very specific situational pass rush role. That's what I mean to say before I got my tongue tied all there. But he's not nearly playing as many run snaps anymore. He's not as far to the right-hand side as Adafi Owe was, you know, in terms of just being exclusively kind of a pass rusher. But he's playing a lot more now that they have some more options on first down. They also got David Ajabo in there. And David Ajabo didn't play a lot of snaps, but he played 8 plays against the run, I think, and 6 other plays against the pass. And he did have 2 pressures as I scored it in this game, which was nice. Not doing a lot overall, frankly. I think if Tavius Robinson comes back, that's probably the point where we'll see David Ajabo sit, providing there aren't more injuries, you know, as you roll your eyes at that.
Yeah, I mean, with Ajabo, I think that question about Ajabo versus Lawson is just as much of a head scratcher as Peoples and Brian. Maybe, you know, there's something with the Lawson signing or practice squad signing, I guess, that they maybe he just needs to get back in shape. I mean, he wasn't playing anywhere for a while, so I don't know. But they made it seem like he was ready to go about a month ago, and for him to be a consistent, you know, non-factor, it's a little bit head scratcher.
It is. I know it's surprising to a lot of people. I think at the heart of this is that the Ravens have the pass rushers that they need now on the team. What they need is additional guys to play the run on early downs. And you know that's true when they're playing Ajabo out there on a fair number of early downs, and then they're rotating him off. Is that's really the kind of player they want. So Lawson doesn't solve any more problems than Ajabo can solve, because the Ravens already have 3 guys they're using in Green, Van Noy, and Draymond on pass downs when they play 3 outside linebackers, even, you know, in the dime package, or in about half their dime packages, I'll even say, because the other half they play Simpson as a rotating guy along the line of scrimmage. But they just don't have any early down outside linebackers at this point. And you know, the other thing you see that they're doing is they're playing a whole lot, but 2 to 3 snaps a game of uncovered nickel, where they've got only 1 outside linebacker in the game on early downs. And that just tells you just how shorthanded this team is right now. I do wonder, how hard is that guy to find? Is it really that hard to find, you know, a veteran guy who sets the edge well? I mean, the guy they had a few years ago, Jason Pierre-Paul, would be a guy that would be the sort of player that I'd be looking for. Guys, you know, probably is done as a pass rusher, but still can play the run pretty well.
Yeah, I it's a good question. I would imagine they've kind of looked at all their options that are out there. I mean, I guess Ajabo has been serviceable in that role. And maybe they think that he's the best option.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, and this is part of the place. I know Kyle Hamilton isn't an outside linebacker, but you know, he does in some ways serve that outside kind of force player in a lot of ways, especially in run defense, also in pass rush situations. So I think he's kind of been their fix at the outside linebacker position in a lot of ways.
I do. Yeah, I think you're right on that. And by the way, I want to talk about Hamilton. So why don't we save some of that for part 2 when we talk about the individual players? Because he's playing with more leverage I've ever seen any player of his type playing with. I think it's worth about a 5 to 7 minute discussion just about that, you know, basically in terms of how that's looked. What else we got going on? The Jets ran the ball effectively at times in this game. They only ran 26 times in the 26 times, not a small number of runs when you only have 57 snaps, but they ran 26 times for 78 yards, which is not good overall, but they certainly had some good runs. Then they tossed in a fumble and, you know, some lower yardage plays. So they didn't have a whole lot of runs for loss in this game. I think they had 1 run for -1. I'm trying to think if they had any others. Hamilton almost got a tackle for loss on a run, but it didn't end up that way. It ended up being a 0 instead of a -1. So I think Humphrey got the 1 tackle for -1 that I can recall. I don't remember another one. There might've been another. But anyway, anything unhappy about the way the run defense played in general in this game?
I think in general they were fine. It wasn't a bad showing. They've had some games where they have shown that they could kind of be run on. And I feel like this was a little bit of a stronger showing. But I think also for the Jets, the run, they ran well enough that it kept their offense in it. You know, they were able to kind of keep the chains moving at times because being able to pick up, stay on schedule kind of with the running game and do enough, you know, in the passing game to kind of like keep some drives going. In the end, it wasn't a real threat for them. You know, they weren't picking up chunk plays too frequently. And I feel like for the Ravens, that's kind of what they want to do, especially with the way they're doing personnel. You know, they want to let you run the ball a little bit, but they don't want, as long as you're not gashing them, it's not going to be a problem.
Yeah, so Minnesota had a number of gash plays, and they averaged 6 2/3 yards per carry. I think it was 18 for 120 they had, but they only ran the ball 18 times. And they couldn't run the ball a lot because they kept getting themselves into the first and 15 holes with all the false starts they had. This game, the Jets did not really have that same problem with a lot of penalties causing offensive setbacks for them. That really wasn't their thing. They had penalties on defense more that were problems for them. And I look at the Ravens run game. I think it was one of their better games the whole year. And you toss in the fact that they actually stripped the ball loose on the run play on Hall for one of the really big plays of the game. And I look at those 25 plays as a big reason the Ravens won this football game.
Yeah. And especially considering, you know, the Jets don't really have a lot more in terms of offensive weapons. Breece Hall is probably their best player. And if you can contain him, I mean, he got loose for that one big catch and run, but on the ground, he only had 44 yards. So
yeah,
overall, I think that's a win.
Mitchell is a huge barbell player in terms of what he does for your offense. He's a big boomer bust guy and not very good in terms of yards per target. He was when he was with Indianapolis, by the way. He was terrific in terms of yards per target. Came to the Jets and he sucks. Some of that obviously is who's throwing him the football at the two different places, but you know, even the drop off from Daniel Jones to Justin Fields would not explain the difference in his production between the two places. But they threw him seven balls in this game. He's largely covered by Wiggins. Very lucky not to have one of them intercepted. That's something really, really good we've seen, is that Wiggins versus these big bodied receivers tends to have the time, make up speed, and the desire to undercut and get back into the play on some back shoulder throws.
Yeah, I think Wiggins is emerging as, you know, that kind of true shutdown type corner for the Ravens, and they really need that. So he's able to, you know, play the perimeter quite well, like you mentioned, with his makeup speed. He's able to get back into, you know, some of the plays where he immediately looks like, or he might get beat by like a step, but then his makeup speed is real. And you mentioned his ability to kind of find the ball as well. I mean, obviously he has 3 interceptions. He leads the team there. I think he's still probably frustrated that he dropped the one that maybe not his easiest interception that he's had this season, but it was definitely a ball he should have caught. But I mean, good ball skills, you know, he finds the ball. He doesn't kind of do the Brandon Stevens and never turn around and find it. You know, he's able to locate.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.
He just has a very good instinct out there, I think, and he's definitely fit right into the way the Ravens envisioned him.
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly been a fine player and been what the Ravens needed him to be as a first round draft pick as well. Let's talk a little bit about packages the Ravens played. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but they did some things that they hadn't done in a long time in this game. first of all, they played five snaps of base, nothing too unusual. Even with Kyle Hamilton, they've been playing a little bit of base defense still. This game was five snaps, 25 yards, 5.0 per play, so nothing to really say about that. The standard nickel, they played five times. That would normally be the biggest ho-hum number of all, although it would be very low for a game for any other team in the NFL. Those were the first five snaps of standard nickel since week five versus Houston. Now, it goes even further than that. Every single five defensive back package they have played since has been some form of big nickel that included Kyle Hamilton on the field, or they've been playing dime. That's another possibility where they do have a slot corner. But the only five snaps, of course, occurred of standard nickel here were with Hamilton out. The first, he was out for two plays earlier, and then he was out for most of that final drive. I think he got injured on the first play, and then he missed some snaps where they still were in nickel. So the one thing that was kind of cool about it was that Humphrey replaced him the very first snap after he went off with a shoulder injury in the first time. Humphrey immediately is in the backfield for RM minus one and made the tackle. And it's like, we got another Hamilton on the field. So it's great.
Honestly, that might be the Ravens' solution, is having Humphrey kind of play in that type of around closer to the line of scrimmage role. I mean, he's better, I think, as almost as, I don't want to say the same type of like force kind of player that Hamilton is, but he's good at run defense. He plays with leverage well. I think he's a bit of a liability in coverage, I think, when he's, especially if he's an outside corner at this point. I feel like he's better closer to the line of scrimmage in the box now at this age of his career than as an outside cornerback. So it might be a better way of actually utilizing him. Obviously Hamilton's a superior player as well, so you don't want to lose that. But if Humphrey's going to be on the field, I kind of feel like that's where he's best suited at this point of his career.
I don't disagree with you. And part of me, you know, has always been thinking it's going to be time for Humphrey to move to safety at some point. And you don't want to make that move too early. It's kind of like moving a starting pitcher to the bullpen. He's not as useful or as scarce a commodity anymore once you make him into a reliever. But that's kind of what you're doing, moving into safety. What you just said, though, is potentially very intriguing. If Hamilton were to miss this game, would it make sense to either, you do multiple things. You can split up Hamilton's role among multiple players. You can bring in a different will linebacker for the dime, and you could bring in a different slot corner depending on down and distance situation even. But one possibility is that Humphrey literally takes the exact same role that Hamilton has, where he plays slot corner on early downs and he moves to will linebacker in the dime package. Not impossible to envision that might be true. Humphrey would be a very imposing player to have in the middle of your defense if you're trying to figure out how to cover various zone threats the Bengals might throw at you with Joe Burrow, including the possibility that you could throw a blitz from somebody other than Humphrey and then allow Humphrey to try and get in a throwing lane, read Burrow, and try to figure out everything he knows from the cornerback position about how to move to the hot lane.
I mean, I've thought for several years now that Humphrey's best position as a cornerback has been in the slot. Mm-hmm. You know, with Hamilton emerging as more of that slot player, Humphrey has not been in the slot as frequently. But now that the Ravens have Ouzier on the outside, they don't necessarily need to have Humphrey playing on the outside as well. Because personally, I think Ouzier has played better than Humphrey when he's been mm-hmm. outside versus Humphrey. So it really makes you question like how you're going to use him moving forward. But you know, and I hate to have it to be like an injury that kind of forces him into that kind of role, but potentially you see, you know, a future with Humphrey as that kind of player. I mean, you know, we saw like Ladarius Webb, for instance, you know, someone who's a longtime Raven who went from being kind of your shutdown corner then due to injuries and age moving into a safety role. I think that could be the transition that Humphrey takes as well.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense for him for a lot of reasons, but for starters, he always had great come off his own man to get the interception skills, which is that's a very portable skill to take to safety. It's basically exactly what a safety does. He's never has his own man, so he's always has to, you know, peel off that not guy to go in and intercept the ball or undercut the ball somewhere else or play loose bracket like Ed Reed did. I think Humphrey could do either of those things, and I think he'd be a good enough tackler on the back end to play the split field role when you want that done. And it may be that 2 years from now, that's exactly where he is, playing next to Starks on the back end with Hamilton, hopefully still at slot corner / will linebacker.
I think it makes sense. And that's the real question mark. And you know, can Humphrey play 10, 15 yards off the line of scrimmage, kind of learn a different position if he's going to play the split safety or a single high safety if need be, and see, you know, if that's a transition that works for him. But I do think, you know, he is someone who is instinctive. You know, he does have that ability to kind of understand like how plays are developing. He's probably lost a little bit of that athleticism that he had earlier, but I mean, he still has speed. You know, I think, you know, he had I forget, but he had like a nice rundown play where he looked fast. You know, he still has some of that athleticism, even if it's not quite the same as it used to be. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see, I think, as this season, you know, unfolds, you know, how they're kind of used together. And it may just be that, you know, it's a dime type package that he and Awuzie and Hamilton are all on the field together at the same time. But I feel like it's hard to keep Awuzie off the field the way he's been playing the corner position. So it's not the worst problem to have, but it's also intriguing because I think that there are different ways that they could go about it.
Yeah. And you know, if they have Keon Martin back this week, it's another guy for the slot who could have real value. And you might want to figure out, I mean, if you're going to have Humphrey in playing a will linebacker on dime packages, that means you have a different slot corner. And I think Keon Martin is probably the guy if he can play. I don't think it would be TJ Tampa, despite the, you know, the fine game he had this last week. Keon Martin just as he's played as well as anybody in the secondary over the last 2 weeks. So it's almost, he got hurt, had a rib injury, had to stay in Cleveland, didn't play in this game, obviously. But the previous 2 weeks, he had, I think it was 5 or 6 drive-ending plays he was involved in over that period. It looks like a demon playing out there. So I was really surprised. I mean, it's very frustrating that he's hurt, but I'd be surprised if he's not involved somehow with some significant snaps if he's healthy as early as this week against Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, if Hamilton has to miss time, it would be great to have him available. It just gives him more flexibility. I mean, he's definitely pretty much just a slot player. He doesn't have the size, I think, to play on the outside. But, you know, you can mix him up potentially at safety, too. I think there's a role for him for sure on defense if someone like Hamilton has to miss time.
All right, let's continue down with the packages. I'll go fairly quickly. Big Nickel, they played 27 snaps. That was all Hamilton at slot corner in there. Reasonably effective, 5.4 yards per play, one turnover in those situations. They played 2 snaps of uncovered nickel in this game. That was both times with Urban on the edge to start with. They had 1 run and 1 pass on those plays. 2 snaps of rush nickel. They had 1 with 1 defensive lineman, 2 inside linebackers, another 2 defensive linemen, 1 inside linebackers, 1 inside linebacker. And each time they played with 3 outside linebackers. That's kind of how I define rush nickel, is there's a outside linebacker kicked inside. 2 plays, minus 8 yards, 1 sack in there, an incomplete pass. 16 snaps of dime. The dime is really coming on the last couple of weeks. 54 yards, 3.4 yards per play in dime. They've been using Hamilton at that will linebacker spot. And now they're going to have to, if he's not available for Thursday, and obviously we're all crossing our fingers still, but they're going to have to figure out who else it can be. Best guess is probably they would return to a 4 corner dime, but I think against Burrow, they're going to want to have an extra defensive back out there and not an extra linebacker. I don't think they really want to have Teddy Buchanan on the field on third down.
Yeah, I really think they might. I mean, it's tough without Hamilton to say if he can't play, but I feel like the dime package might be one of their best packages, because it's hard to imagine the Bengals really being a run heavy team. Once Joe Burrow comes back, I think they're going to have him playing pretty much entirely off shotgun, my guess would be, considering the injury that he has, he's probably not going to be under center very often.
Yeah.
I think you can match that with a pretty heavy percentage of dime, and, you know, force tight window throws. You can do some bracketing with man, to kind of keep the ball out of, you know, Chase's hands and really, you know, force him to throw to the Mike Gesicki's of the world and let them beat us. So that would be my approach, I think.
Yeah, they don't have a bunch of power options on as far as running the football either. They're just not built to really do that against a team like the Ravens, in particular a team that, you know, presents almost everybody with two nose tackles on a high percentage of rundowns. They're not set up to run against that anyway, even if you decided. So what that does for you is that you can play dime you can cheat to dime in a broader set of down and distance situations where you say, screw it. If you're an 11 personnel, we'll take the chance and go with dime here. We don't think you're going to run the football. And, you know, second and seven, you can start playing dime if you want to. Second and eight, you can do it. It's without risk, but it could be a good gamble against somebody like Burrow.
Just a quick kind of follow-up question. Because, you know, one of the players I think who could also be a factor is how they use Trenton Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't really been using him very much. I mean, he's been very limited snaps. Have you tracked which of these packages he was in on?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, he plays in the dime package and about half of those dime snaps. So it was actually 16 dime snaps this week, and Simpson played, I believe, six of them, and it was pretty much all... I'll tell you when he played. Okay, so Simpson played first of all. He played, and this is going to differ from the snap totals because it doesn't include penalties, so I'll warn you about that to start with. Yeah, I have him for six snaps, two run and four pass. These two runs were both scrambles, but he was on for four passes as well. And when they brought him in, they had him and Roquan in, and they used one defensive lineman each time, and that's Travis Jones. And then they had him on with two outside linebackers on third down. So they would use 1, 2, 2, and 6 is the way to think of it in terms of the total of 11 players, with six being the number of defensive backs.
Got it. They were definitely used him in some interesting ways, lining him up, you know, the outside linebacker position, lining him up off ball, like more of a classic weak side linebacker. I think he provides them some certain elements that, if they don't have Hamilton, could be, you know, some athleticism, some pass rushing juice potentially. It'll be interesting if he gets more snaps.
Yeah, so I like how Simpson has played this year. Don't get me wrong. I think he is a somewhat limited player, and maybe that's why his snaps are limited, because he's been used as a what I call a roving pass rusher. The Ravens have had this position in the past, by the way, where, for example, in 2000, they played a 31 quarter for a very high percentage of third, medium, and long snaps. Played 55 times they played that package during the regular season. So 31 means they're playing three defensive linemen. They actually lined up Rob Burnett on the nose in a very funny slant alignment. People might remember it just from hearing those words. And then they used Ray Lewis to kind of roam the line of scrimmage, but he almost exclusively be used as a pass rusher. And they would hand over the coverage to seven guys, including Trapp, Harris, and Bailey, who weren't very well known from that 2000 defense. So three journeyman guys who played the fifth, sixth, and seventh defensive backs. And so they've done it before. With Simpson, he can line up anywhere along the line of scrimmage. He's roving. But what he can't do is he really won't line up with his hand in the dirt as an edge. He's not a true outside linebacker. He's not going to set the edge ever on an early down. The Ravens will never see that. So he's not really a true outside linebacker. He's a roving pass rusher, or a mug a gap inside linebacker, if you want to think of him that way. But you know, it's weird because he lines up all over, and that it's interesting. The Ravens have seen it before. It's not like they've never done it. But Simpson's a kind of a unique talent to do it with, and certainly has brought pass rush juice. But the limitation I was referring to earlier, though, is that I don't think he's a very good coverage player. And so if you drop him, he just has a tendency to get lost in space or not know where he's supposed to be in zone. And that kind of happened on a play they ended up attributing to Gilman. It might have been a 6 plus 7, like a 13-yard. Was that a touchdown? It might have been the touchdown to Mechie. Yeah, that was a 13-yard play. I think that's the one I'm thinking of. So it's on 3rd and 10, and Simpson was on the field on that play, and he kind of faked a blitz, and then he dropped off, and he wasn't really doing anything. He's not rushing the passer, and he's not also dropping into exactly the spot where he could have been either in the lane or racing after Mechie to try and see if he could drag that route. Nothing like that. So he kind of got lost in space on that play. That's where I have problems with Simpson. I think that's what's hurt him with the Ravens coaches. Because remember, he had the weak side linebacker job all to himself at the start of last year.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, because he has some of the traits and characteristics you like to see, especially as someone who's moving forward in some of the, especially when they're running some of those like stunts and games and using the linebackers as blitzers and picking players. Like, he works really well on some of those pass rush packages. But if that's the only thing he can do, you're kind of, one, you're limiting what you can do in that package, and it's also tipping off the offense as to potentially there may be some sort of blitz coming or some sort of feign blitz at the very least.
I mean, I think part of what it does is Simpson, because there's such a desire to use him as a pass rusher, almost makes your pass rush less flexible.
Yeah.
Dropping him to coverage. But, on the other hand, if you can draft Travis Jones to coverage or drop Michael Pierce last year to coverage, you could drop anybody. So go ahead and drop Simpson in the middle field. He's got to be 30 or 40% better than Travis Jones. Drop it to cover, right? So you would think.
Yeah. I mean, and he was a converted safety too. So you'd think he has some knowledge of how to find his like landmarks when he's dropping the coverage, but it seems like he just gets lost out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fair enough. Let's move on and talk about the pass rush a little bit. We got about 10 minutes left in this first episode. I want to get through what I can out of this. First of all, the Ravens had one of their best pressure games of the season. I don't think people really realize this, probably because the results weren't that good overall, that the Jets still threw the ball fairly effectively. But they gave Taylor ATS on 10 plays, 32%. That's a little bit high. Maybe about 28, 29% would be normal. So just above, about 10% more than wouldn't be normal for this number of attempts, which means about one additional attempts than you'd expect. 82 yards on those, 8.2 yards per play, right on expectation, about 3 yards below expectation, in fact, for those. A good number is he only got 5 balls out quick, only 16%. And normally when a guy's being pressured, the ball out quick number will go up dramatically, because part of what he's trying to do is avoid pressure situations. In particular, when there's a bad pressure to ATS relationship, usually those ball out quicks will go up. Tyrod Taylor's a veteran quarterback. The Jets certainly have weapons who know how to turn and see the football. Mechie in particular is a veteran guy. And then they also have Breece Hall and Mason is I'm forgetting Mason, his first name or his last name, the tight end, number 85, Mason.
I think it's Taylor. Yeah.
Taylor Mason. Is he rookie or second year playing? I'm trying to remember.
He's a rookie. Yeah. Rookie of LSU. Yeah.
Okay. So he was on the list last year. He's a guy who should be able to provide them something as a hot read, because I'm sure he had to do that plenty and certainly in his college days. But, Taylor really red hot effectively in this game. So the 5 BOQ plays, they got 46 yards, 9.2 yards per play. That's above expectation by about 16 yards. Mm-hmm. With pressure, the Ravens got 16 pressures to only 10 ATS. Now, the Ravens have had some ungodly, horrible pressure to ATS relationships, but that's the best for the Ravens have had this year. 52% pressure for the game. They got 76 net yards on those plays, which is a little high still, 4.8 yards per play, but you're happy to give up more of those 4.8 yards per play plays. You'd rather have 100% of those if you could, obviously, in your passing game. So it's a positive thing. They got 3 sacks. They got 1 turnover on those plays. Even though Taylor was 20 yards above expectation on those, most of that was yak. In fact, more than 100% of that difference was in yak.
Yeah, and that's where the it was really just 2 plays. I think it was like the long Mechie run after catch and the, mm-hmm. the Hall run after catch. So
it's the Mitchell had a big one too for like 26 mm-hmm. yards. Yeah. It was 12 plus 14 or thereabouts.
Yeah, so it's just all in all, I think, like you said, the pressure was good. We talked a little bit about Mike Green earlier. We didn't spend mm-hmm. a lot of time on him, but I thought he had a really good game in this one as just someone who could win in a 4-man pass rush. And obviously, I think Draymond Jones as well. Just that combination is better than I think what the Ravens have frankly had in the past couple of years as pure like pass rush off the edge. I mean, Ben Noy and Owe, you know, they've been okay, but most of their production I feel like has come when they've been doing like more of the blitzing and more of the you know, the simulated pressures and some of the deception. I feel like that's where a lot of their production has come from, and a lot of it was driven by the interior pass rush as well. So they had, I think, just as pure like edge pass rush talent, it's a good combination out there.
Yeah, I mean, they probably had a better group in 23 when they had Clowney and Van Noy. That was probably a more potent combination, or Clowney and Owe even. But I don't disagree with you. I'm not trying to put down the notion. I think they haven't gotten enough production out of their outside linebackers this year, and pick up Draymond has greatly improved their situation, and we're lucky to have him, frankly. What I want to say other than that, or really cut down on any blitzing in this game. He's been doing more in recent weeks, but only 8 rushes of 5 plus in this game. And by the way, when they did that, they gave up 9.8 yards per play. So they were really doing Tyrod a favor to get in his face like that and go after him. He red hot, like I said, very well. They're very effective with a 4-man pass rush in this game. 4-man pass rush is basically everything else they did. Real quick, I'll give you the information on that. Yeah, the 4-man pass rush, they had 23 4-man pass rushes. They averaged 5.5 yards per play given up, but they had all 3 other sacks and 1 turnover in that. I can't tell you how good it is to have 3 sacks on 23 4-man rushes. That's over 12%. It's almost 13%. That's just a fantastic number in terms of that. And also they had a turnover that occurred. That was the Tampa interception at the end of the game.
I think if they're going to have any success as the team defense, they need to be consistently able to generate pressure with 4-man rush. We've seen them dial up the blitzes and it's been effective at times, and you have to have a mixture of both. But when you need to get pressure with 4, I think that is really what's the hallmark of any of the top defenses
of all time.
So it's really a differentiator from a defensive perspective.
Gabe, I'm with you 100% on that, but here's my problem with being able to do that. It's one of the most incredibly expensive things to maintain you can imagine about a football team. First of all, the cost of edge rushers who are any good right now is just through the roof. So if you're going to do it, you almost have to do it the Ravens way at 20% of the cost by getting these vet guys off the scrap heap and hoping they work out. And the Ravens have been very good at picking them like that. The last 2 years, you know, they've been right up there at the top. Well, they've been first and second the last 2 years in the NFL in sacks, right? In 23 and 24. Yeah. So I think that's the way to do it. I don't buy that. I certainly don't buy the trading for Micah Parsons route. I think that's just an absurd, you know, you're giving 3 quarts of blood to get Micah Parsons, then you're giving 2 more quarts of blood to get him, and then 3 more quarts of blood to pay him. After that, I don't believe in that as a franchise building strategy. I don't think it works.
Yeah. I think the really unfortunate thing for the Ravens is losing Nnamdi Madueke, because if they had him, I think this front becomes something that's completely different. Travis Jones has had some nice games in the pass rush. He's not the same caliber of, you know, one-on-one winner, I think, as Madueke. And he's done well, but he's not at that tier. And it would have been great to have Madueke out there with these 2 guys off the edge. Now, I really do feel like the Ravens kind of lucked into someone like Mike Green, who's, I feel like, just getting better and better every week. He was kind of tabbed by most people as a top 10, 15 talent in the draft. And I think he's showing that talent. He's won in the way he wins some of the reps off the edge. It's just, and that's what I was trying to say. Like, I haven't seen that from other Ravens pass rushers off the edge. And if he continues to build on that and get stronger, you know, keep working with Chuck Smith, you know, keep getting that that pass rush repertoire, understanding like how to sequence his different rushes. I really think that he can be a difference maker for them. And then obviously having Jones on the other side, he's a very high quality pass rusher. He's not like elite talent. Neither of them are really truly elite, but having two guys, I think it makes such a big difference. And if you can get any kind of, you know, pass rush from your Brent Urbans, from your Travis Jones, I think you have something that, that accounts to, you know, a solid way to kind of at least make quarterbacks uncomfortable. Even if you're not getting a sack, you just making them uncomfortable getting off the spot. If you're dropping seven coverage, it's going to end up in a good result most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I'm really happy with what they've been able to generate out of very little early in the season. I think numerous things. One thing you didn't mention is Travis Jones moving to three tech is a much more potent weapon because he's getting a lot more singles going up just against a guard. And then, you know, you have John Jenkins has provided some value as a pass rusher. He's drawn some holding calls. He's done some good things that have helped the team. And he's a guy who's actually adding a little bit. They've got multiple small increments of improvement since that horrific start. And hopefully when they start facing some quarterbacks who are pretty good again in Burrow, I guess the Steelers aren't really going to necessarily present them with that. We'll see if Rodgers is back. We'll see, you know, exactly what they have at quarterback. But we'll see if some of it holds up against teams like New England and Green Bay in particular.
Yeah. And, you know, the Bengals don't have the best offensive line. You know, that's been a weakness for theirs for quite a while. So it'll be interesting to see how well this Ravens defensive front can apply the pressure in this game, especially if they do kind of go with that, you know, rush forward, drop seven type approach more frequently against someone like Burrow.
Yeah. Yeah. Is a good chance. I think that's where it ends up. But one thing we've noticed, and you really notice it when you're facing top quarterbacks, but Manning in his prime would just absolutely burn the Ravens endlessly if they tried to blitz him.
Yeah.
And Mahomes in recent years has been the guy who just, has had some unbelievable games against blitz looks when the Ravens have tried that. I do think Burrow is the guy who finds that weakness in your defense fairly effectively. Mahomes is even better at it, and Manning was very good at it too. But I am afraid that this is a week where Burrow figures out how to exploit Teddy Buchanan and what he brings to the field. We haven't seen growth from Buchanan. It's not like he's been terrible in coverage. He just hasn't been particularly great. And I think he's a guy that all of a sudden could look bad. Roquan is another guy who, if he's left in coverage, that a Burrow could make look bad. And you know, it's just the nature of the game.
Yeah, I think that is the one reason why the Ravens don't play more man coverage is because they're linebackers. You know, Roquan has gotten, I think, better. He's shown a little bit more of what we saw, I think, maybe back in 2023 in terms of his coverage. But he's still, I think, probably better as a zone. And Buchanan, absolutely. He's you don't want him, you know, covering like a Chase Brown in man coverage. That would not go well for the Ravens, I don't think.
Right. I like Roquan's zone awareness too. And I think, you know, his downhill play is extremely valuable in the passing game. I don't think anybody would doubt that. But yeah, I mean, there's not that many inside linebackers who can play man, period. Even with the tight ends in this league. I mean, it's just too hard. So anyway, most teams don't play much man anymore at all. The teams that play a lot of man play about 30%. And when they do it, they're usually playing it on third down. And it's usually a matter of some form of man where the cornerbacks on the edge are really trying to press and prevent that pass from coming out quickly while they try and generate a pressure. All right, tell you what, we'll cut off the first episode here. We'll start off with some deception in the pass rush in the second part. But Gabe, talk about where people can hit you up with a question if they want to on whatever social media you would like to be contacted on.
Yeah, I think the best platform is X or Twitter, still called Twitter. You can find me at Gabe Fergie. That's handle that I'm pretty much active throughout the week. But definitely on like game day leading up to the games, I'm generally talking about what I'm seeing, mostly the frustrations, but also the good as well. But yeah, I'm always, you know, interested in hearing other people's opinions and seeing if there's questions about, you know, personnel or some of the different offensive kind of or defensive approaches in terms of game plans. I love talking about that kind of nerdy stuff.
And okay, if people tag you in on conversations, because I've always found someone, you're a really good person to be added. That can lead people to a long victim to this thing. Tied into all kinds of discussions between Bills and Ravens fans I don't want to be part of, but it does happen sometimes. But anyway.
Totally. Feel free.
Gabe is someone who you'll really appreciate having in a good, grounded conversation about football. So you could probably tell that from listening to this episode, and really appreciate you coming on. Other folks out there, starting a new series here that has been going on for about a week now, where I do these 2 to 4 minute shorts. I'm hoping they'll be of approximately that length. My wife is telling them that they need to be shorter, and it's her idea originally to start doing these, but it does appear like she's onto something in terms of the popularity of them. I'm trying to figure out where they should go. So far, I'm putting them on Reddit, or I'm putting them on Twitter. There may be other places. Maybe Instagram is a place for it. Maybe YouTube at some point would be a place I'd add it. But here's what I'm asking you for. As fans of the show, you have hashtag film study mailbag. I will pick out questions from there if you want me to answer them specifically in a short. And hopefully it's something I can answer in 1 to 2 minutes. If it's a complete like theory of franchise building thing, that's not going to work for that. If it's a very specific question about why do they use this package in this situation, or what's the advantage of having so-and-so on the field over so-and-so in some particular situation, that's the kind of question that would be extremely good. I've got a lot of good questions about that. I'm hoping to make this into a regular series. And it's only if people want it. You know, if people don't want it, then it'll die out pretty quickly. But if you want to be part of it, love to get your questions and get them addressed in a quicker, simpler format, and probably showing up at least at first on Twitter directly. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Gabe, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Go to Dutch.com to get vet care that is always there for just $92 a year.